Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, David Slack.
Morena, what a beautiful day, huh?
Yeah, hi, David. Lovely. Yeah, I know. Beautiful days we've been having.
I'm loving it.
And that's a fact, not our opinion, isn't it?
Oh, good one, Millie.
You read the material.
Oh, I did. You know me. I love a good bit of source material. We're talking opinion versus fact today. Something that, you know, seems clear-cut, but...
gets conflated.
Yes.
It truly does. And I think, in part, it's a function of the way we've got more polarised in our... debate. There is less willingness for people to listen to the other side and hear the other side, and there's and possibly too, it's a function of the kind of media cycle we have now and the online language that becomes ever more sort of truncated and bumper sticker, so that what was once a considered opinion about the causes of inflation becomes a very emphatic. The last government stuffed everything up, and now we're in the ditch. That kind of thing. And when you're doing that, you're leaving less room for the facts to be adduced. You're just saying, "Oh, the economy's stuffed," or "Oh, the inflation rate is terrible," or "Oh, our debt is out of control." All of that kind of thing. And this government, arguably, has been from the off, especially inclined to doing it that way, because they were looking to make sure they won that last election, and they've discovered that it was much more helpful for them if they didn't complicate their arguments with detail. And so things that you would say were, you know, debatable at best, yet presented as a stone cold fact. And the reason I jumped into all of this is, when I say you did the reading, well, I'm referring, of course, to my Substack a couple of days ago that talked about last week's Treasury report,
yes,
which is notionally about our long term prospects. And Craig Rennie has written a very good piece about it on his Substack, looking in detail at what's involved. And you know, as you might expect, the job of Treasury is to look at something more than just the day-to-day numbers, but ask, you know, where are we trending, where are we tracking? And notionally, this was a long-term view, but it included some observations about the government spending in the pandemic, and makes the assertion, and it is an assertion, not a fact, that the government overspent. And if on first blush, that's an easy statement to hear and accept as plausible. But if we go back and look at the situation we were facing and the complete unknown nature of the whole thing.
Well, totally. I mean, how do you price a pandemic?
Yeah. And how do you price? Let's remember those first few weeks in particular, when we knew that what was necessary was that we had to shut everything down to stop this thing spreading, because we didn't know that much about that thing then. And for all we knew, the people were going to be dying in their thousands if we let it spread. And we already had the evidence in Italy that this was happening. So they made a perfectly sensible decision that they would shut everything down. And while we were figuring out what to do next, they would keep money flowing through the economy so that everybody would go on buying and selling and living and sustaining themselves, and people would have the reassurance that they didn't have to fret about the consequences of staying home. All perfectly good. And to some extent, the Treasury report accepts that too, and so do the likes of even the Act Party. But where it diverges is that they tend to say, but we should have, you know, we went on much longer than we needed to. Well, did we, actually?
Did
you know,
we?
It took time for the vaccine to be developed, and in fact, you know, that's another amazing dimension to all of this. If we hadn't had the vaccine, consider how things might have played out. But that bit aside, there was good sense in how the government did it, and here's the bottom line to all of it. They had to borrow a lot of money to do that. But in comparative terms across the world, they borrowed not all. Well, they ended up with a level of debt that is much lower than most other economies in the world. Now, they did spend more, and this is what Treasury argues. Oh, you could have got it for less. That's a classic New Zealand line.
50% off.
For less. Yeah, I've got a mate. Well, good for you. But you know. Where we ended up out of all of that was with a debt level that's about 55% of GDP, which if you, and on my Substack, if I might just blatantly promote things more than a fielding, I've got a graph from the Visual Capitalist, or in fact I might recommend, go to have a look at Visual Capitalist, it's a really good site. They've got this one of government debt around the world, and it's got all these little dots. It looks like somebody with chicken pox, actually.
Yeah.
But you go through all of these dots on the graph, and you say, where's New Zealand? Where's New Zealand? Where's New Zealand? And you know that and you know our experience is that we can find New Zealand at 50 paces. There's a Z on the page. We will find the Z.
Yes.
There is not one on this graph, and that's because our debt is just so much lower than all of those others. We are at 55%, and all of these are 60-plus. Italy, 137. US, 123. Japan, 235% of GDP.
Something that was interesting was Sudan sitting at 252. That's oof.
Poor old Sudan.
I mean, concerning.
Geez, there is nothing good about life in Sudan. It hasn't been for about 30, 20 years now.
Mm.
Maybe one day we'll have a talk about the benighted state of Africa, thanks to European conquest over the last 150 years. But that's for another day, eh?
Yeah, that could be a good chat, though.
Good, eh? And of course, it ties into the large questions we've got about colonialism here. But I digress wildly. The thing that I was going on about mostly was that here we have this assertion in particular that the last government overspent and the last government has left us in debt. And people just say that. And the politicians, especially the Prime Minister, just say that and expect everybody to accept it. And regrettably, many people do. You know, it's just an article of faith for a certain sector of, say, the News Talk ZB audience and that kind of thing. Mm. And they will happily come and tell everybody else about it. So what I was writing about also on the newsletter this week was I had happened to have been out for coffee on Tuesday morning, and somebody who's a great enthusiast for the government had said, did you see the Treasury report last week? What do you think of that? You know, and was essentially saying, this is absolutely a slam dunk. Treasury says that the government overspent it, so obviously they were absolutely in it. Well, no. This is when you get a Treasury report of this kind, which, as I mentioned, was supposed to be about long-term strategies mostly.
Yeah.
That's an economist's assessment, the assessment of several economists. But it's not actually, unless you have all of the data to back it all up and say incontrovertibly, this was overspending. It is simply an opinion. The world of economic analysis is absolutely riven with necessarily opinion, because we can't say for certain that many of these things are a fact. And that's all fine. It's all desirable that we have all of this analysis. But the mistake people make, like my friend who presented it as a slam dunk on Tuesday, the mistake is to see this as the last word and the edict from on high. and it ain't. It's just another record. And so we have this frustration to deal with, that the debate doesn't really get had, because it just begins and end with a bald assertion.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you do about all of that? Well, I tell you what. As a small illustration, that particular exchange on Tuesday morning, I quite often just smile and say nothing, because it's just easier. Stuff it. I'm gonna push back here. So I did, and you know, it wasn't rancorous or anything.
No.
But I just kept going, and I said, no, look here, and laid out some of those numbers I just laid out before, and some of that reasoning. And I also mentioned, I said, have you by any chance been in London and walked along the South Bank lately? No, he hadn't. But I said, we were there earlier this year, and we saw that wall that you see the photo of with all the hearts on it. And it is a hell of a thing. It is a memorial wall of everyone in the UK who died in the COVID pandemic. And you walk, and you walk, and you walk. And these are just little hearts about the size of, half your palm.
Mm.
And each of them has a heart and a name on it. And each of those is somebody who died in that pandemic. And for every single one of those hearts, you're thinking, all those families, all those friends, you know. And you are walking and walking and seeing, and this wall would be, 2 meters high, I suppose. And it's just so many hearts.
And that's what the Treasury has come out and said we've spent too much on, saving that many lives.
You got it.
Oh, cool. Well, that's great.
Well, this is exactly, why we're seeing a lack of action over Palestine, right? I mean, people getting too afraid of tariffs versus preserving human life.
You bet. You know, this is a very, very timid government that is waiting for everybody else to do something before they do anything, so that they won't get any consequences. And Helen Clark has rightly said, you know, does this stand for anything at all? And it doesn't, outside of protecting trade, which is, human life comes first.
It does.
What do you make of Chloe Swarbrick being kicked out of the house?
I wrote a thing on Blue Sky. What did I say? I want to get my words right. I said, hang on, where's he gone? I can't find it, but I was saying, have an election and we'll show you who should be thrown out of the fucking chamber.
That's good. I find it fascinating because Chloe isn't the first to call the opposition spineless. I read the other day that Karen McAnulty he's said a similar thing, and John Key in the past has called the opposition gutless, and they haven't been thrown out of the house for these comments. So I'm a little confused as to why it's happening now.
I found one of Brooke GPT a couple of years ago calling the government gutless, and I put that on Blue Sky too. She's calling both the government and the minister gutless. You know. It's perfect. It beggars belief that you would get prissy about this the way Jerry Brownlee has. And in fact, Andrew Geddis has been writing good stuff about this, saying that essentially he acted from peak and now is backfilling the reasons. And that's Jerry Brownlee all over.
Oh, totally. Totally. Well, it'll be interesting to see if any action is taken. I mean, the Treasury report is not a good sign of how things are going when you're looking that hard in the rearview mirror in something that's supposed to be out the windscreen.
Look, and I tell you this too, that I think both in terms of the economy and Palestine, that the general mood sees things rather differently from Treasury and from this government and its timidity about Palestine. I think there is a general mood now that is saying, Jesus Christ, have you seen these starving kids? Never mind the arguments about acting in defence or any of that shit. This is too far. This is monstrous. This is indefensible. This has to stop.
100%. Hey, thank you so much for your time today, David Slack. Always lovely to talk to you. Always lovely to get to the nitty-gritty of it. And we'll chat to you next week, probably.
Well, Will do. Cheers, mate. Cheers.
Thanks. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.